This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, a podcast where we discuss the themes driving markets and the economy today and in the future. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we take a deep dive into what's happening in the US, what life's like on the ground in New York.
And I will tell you, in New York City, the mask culture is widely accepted and you see it everywhere, which is interesting. I don't think of New Yorkers as the most compliant people.
The inherent dangers in the stocks driving market returns.
60% of those companies need to raise money in the next six quarters, and 80% of them have negative earnings and negative cash flow.
And the strugglers as markets seemingly prepare for a Biden presidency.
I do think that traditional energy companies are running uphill, so to speak.
Welcome to the show. How are you? I hope you're all safe and well and keeping out of trouble. I'm afraid it's hard to escape the pandemic and its effect on the economy and markets. So today we're going to speak to a Schroders fund manager based in the US, where the virus continues to spread. Bob Kaner manages Schroders US Small and Mid-Cap Fund. He's based in New York and he's been watching markets and the economy fluctuate wildly over the last 7 months. He's been there during the eye of the pandemic and has seen the city fight its way back. He's still there with his family. We discuss what's been going on in markets, what he's seeing on the ground in terms of the economy bouncing back. We also discuss the potential change in leadership within markets later in the year as the US and the world braces itself for a presidential election. But in part one, I wanted to know what his experience on the ground in the US has been like.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So what I wanted to know from Bob in particular is what it's like now regarding the spread of the pandemic and what New Yorkers are doing differently from the rest of the country.
I think the concern is that it's spreading in areas that didn't see it initially. While it was very focused in the densely populated urban markets, the spread is kind of creeping out of those areas. In New York, they've done an exceptional job at containing it. And I will tell you, in New York City, the mask culture is widely accepted and you see it everywhere, which is interesting. I don't think of New Yorkers as the most compliant people, but they're certainly taking it seriously and it's showing up in the numbers. And I think the greater concern is kind of where you're starting to see the increased spiking numbers now and what's going to happen when kids go back to school.
Certainly, there is still much uncertainty with virus cases rising across the world. Despite that, stock markets, particularly the US stock market, continues to power on. So, in part two, we're going to focus on the market and the economy.
Get in touch with us by email at schroderspodcasts@schroders.com or visit our website, schroders.com/investor download.
So on previous shows, we've discussed the astonishing market reaction to the pandemic. In brief, the US stock market ended a near 11-year record bull run in February with the sharpest and deepest correction in history. Governments and central banks then applied a band-aid in the form of monetary and fiscal stimulus to the deep economic wound caused by the pandemic. That prompted a recovery in markets, so much so that the S&P has hit all-time highs even when there is still so much economic uncertainty. But not everything has recovered equally. Year-to-date, US small caps are still lagging the larger caps and tech firms are still leading the recovery by a long way. Bob takes up the story.
If you think about what's happened this year in the US, I kind of think of the market in three different phases. We had the pre-corona collapse, I'll call the eye of the storm, and then the fiscal and monetary policy induced recovery. In the US, it's been a year of varied returns. Certainly we've had the haves and the have nots. The have nots really can be characterized as optically inexpensive, more cyclical, and smaller capitalization, while the haves are defined by large cap, secular growth, and very expensive. As you can see, the one consistency through these different phases of the market we've seen this year is this significant outperformance of large cap tech.
So tech stocks, perhaps unsurprisingly, given their applications have become so essential during the pandemic, have led the recovery among large caps. But has that been repeated among smaller companies?
In the small cap universe, healthcare and technology have been the leaders. Healthcare has really been led by biotechnology, which is fascinating given that 60% of those companies need to raise money in the next 6 quarters, and 80% of them have negative earnings and negative cash flow. So I think it's been a little bit unprecedented what we've seen in the healthcare space. You know, biotechnology is 12% of the Russell 2000 of the small cap index. And in the eye of the storm, they were the best performing industry within the market. If you look at the large cap space, it's obviously been led by technology and consumer discretionary, but I would just highlight that just consumer discretionary is really just Amazon. The traditional cyclical areas of the market have clearly collapsed, with financials, producer durables, and energy leading the declines.
So far, so well covered, but I wanted to know what was unique about the recent recovery.
Perhaps, you know, the greatest anomaly in this uncertain market backdrop has been the significant outperformance of companies with negative earnings versus those with positive earnings. If you bought the every company that was losing money in the Russell 2000, you'd be up 5% this year. If you had a portfolio of companies with positive earnings, you'd be down 17% this year. So in a year of spiking unemployment, a collapsing GDP, market participants are seeking safety in companies that have negative earnings and negative cash flow. It's led to an outcome where growth has outperformed value to a level that we have not seen since the 1999, early 2000s period. So while extreme, this is not atypical in periods of economic uncertainty where market participants gravitate towards secular growth with little consideration for the multiples being paid for that growth.
So it seems, despite everything that is going on, investors have been willing to take risks, perhaps a lesson learned from the global financial crisis, which has meant markets bouncing back much quicker. Of course, taking risks comes with its dangers. But if most investors are still buying into the same tried and tested stocks, what's it going to take to turn the tide, perhaps to see the value start outperforming growth, for instance?
I think we need higher multiples or higher interest rates in the U.S. in order to start to see that. I think in order to see you never know what's going to cause the tide to shift. But we've seen periods of superior earnings growth in small cap versus large cap, and yet large caps outperform. I think really what we need is greater certainty, a little bit greater certainty of the economic environment. In order to see value outperform, growth is really the safety trade when we're in an uncertain economic environment. So I think greater certainty around the economic outlook, slow but steady interest rates rising, a modest amount of inflation, all very positive for value. But you can go back to the late 90s, early 2000s. There is no real explanation for what caused the bubble to pop in March of 2000. And drive a significant outperformance of value over the next two to three years up until March of 2003. So those are some of the things you can put your finger on. But again, the market has a way of doing what's most painful to the maximum number of participants.
A word of warning there from Bob. Of course, part of the reason for markets powering ahead is the support from governments and central banks, be it reducing interest rates or putting money directly into people's pockets to support them while the economy was closed.
One of the true anomalies in this cycle is the magnitude of fiscal support that we've seen during this downturn. You know, there's really no greater evidence in my mind than this. As unemployment went from 3% to almost 13%, we had disposable income in the U.S. was up 5.5% over the same time period. That just puts into context the level of support, government support to the consumer. And I think it probably also should emphasize, you know, that level of support is clearly not going to be sustainable.
So, astonishingly, a lot of people's personal wealth rose during the lockdown, despite businesses being closed and unemployment rising. But we are seeing them hoard money and change their spending habits when they actually do spend their money, which is causing an unprecedented type of recession.
I would say for the first time in the U.S., that I can recall, we are in a services recession, not a manufacturing recession. We've seen the services economy, you know, explode in the U.S. over the last 30 plus years. And so, you know, we've all heard about the U.S. consumer spending more on experiences than on things, quote unquote. That seems to be changing. You can see there is a what appears to be a more permanent change in behavior in many areas in the U.S. You see experiential type, well, I'll say higher end consumer durable, social distancing compliant activities like boating and RVs have never seen numbers better. But there is a large question of whether or not somebody is going to want to go into a crowded restaurant in New York, in Midtown Manhattan, even when it does reopen. So I think you certainly have to be thinking about how the consumer behavior has permanently changed.
If we're going to change habits, what more can policymakers do?
Sure. I mean, it's certainly you are seeing savings increase, debt pay down kind of increasing. The key, I think, to the market, and if we ever are going to see any kind of inflation, is the velocity has to pick up, and that money has to begin circulating. The consumer has certainly been buoyed by this to some extent. The U.S. government was very liberal in handing out stimulus checks. I can say that I have a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old child, both of whom received $1,200 checks in the mail. So I don't think there was a tremendous amount of I would say they took a sledgehammer instead of a scalpel initially. And then I think we will start to see something a little bit more strategic in terms of how the next rounds of funds get dispersed. But it is, you know, the consumer's certainly been held up. And I think you've started to see kind of a slowdown in real time data as we become kind of closer to the end of those extended unemployment benefits that can give a U.S. worker up to, an incremental $600 a month. Just to put that in perspective, if you live in a higher cost market in one of the coastal markets in the U.S., you can be making currently on $53,000 on unemployment, given the extended stimulus that's in place. But I don't know how you incentivize people to get onto a crowded airplane or pack into a crowded restaurant.
So tough questions that need answering if we're going to reverse the current trend. But in the final part of the show, outside of an astonishing economic recovery, we look at what might change the leadership in the market as the year goes on. So we started off by discussing what issues could change the leadership of the market, and the election is high up on most investors' agenda. Legislating big tech has already been big news, with the heads of the four biggest tech companies already testifying in front of Congress, defending their competitive or anti-competitive behaviours. But Bob says there'll be a particular focus on healthcare and price controls and the potential for a huge infrastructure bill, which could influence market leadership.
The issues that I really think could change the leadership of the market, one, as referenced before, healthcare. Any sort of price controls in the U.S., similar to the dialogue that we saw during the Clinton campaign 4 years ago, could significantly change the return profile that we've seen in biotechnology. You will see a collapse in biotech if we start to see or start to hear about price controls. Big tech, certainly increased regulation would limit the growth prospects. But I actually think, you know, the most meaningful potential change to the leadership in the market would be a significant infrastructure bill. I think that, you know, that it appears right now to be bipartisan, but it definitely has the greatest ability to change the complexion of leadership that we've seen in the U.S. markets. I've highlighted the potential winners and potential losers throughout this election. I would say the market has begun to price a Biden victory. We see that a little bit really in the energy space, kind of clean energy, electric auto. You know, that's clearly a priority for the Biden campaign. You've started to see that really play out in the market. and also traditional energy, you know, even with recovery in oil prices, you're not seeing any participation from the underlying equities. Those are the types of things I think that are indicative of the market beginning to price in a Biden victory.
Clearly, a change in president could have a dramatic effect on the market. The two candidates' views and policies are far apart. For instance, we know Trump doesn't believe in climate change and was a supporter of the coal industry, but Biden has a strong green agenda. So could that agenda irreparably dismantle any momentum behind traditional cyclical stocks?
Yeah, I think that we're starting to see kind of traditional energy companies really start to price in a Biden win. And I think that, you know, you'll see increased restrictions on drilling, onshore drilling in the U.S. under a Biden presidency. And I think you would see a significant amount of subsidy for green energy. I think it is one of the consistent messages that we've heard from the Biden camp. I actually think that we haven't talked about it much here, but the Biden VP selection could even, you know, swing even further that direction.
We now know that Kamala Harris is Joe Biden's running mate in the election. She has strong views on health, climate change, gun controls, and women's rights, among many others. If you want to find out even more about how Biden's policies might affect stock prices, you can read a piece by Sean Markowitz at Schroders.com called "Would a Biden Presidency Hurt Stock Prices?" Or you can listen to Sean on a previous podcast, "Who Will Win the US Election?" It was released on July 23rd. Many thanks to Bob Kaner for joining me. On next week's episode, we'll be discussing what investors were really doing when markets were tanking in February.
I'd love to know. But honestly, ignorance is bliss sometimes.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroders.com/the investor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. And if you want to rate, review, and subscribe to us, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, with new shows available on a Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.